have you with us on the Jimbo Haddon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. We're talking with John Lott, repeat guest and a man always welcome back. He is the president of CrimePreventionResearchCenter.org and has been interested in a wide variety of issues over the years. He's held teaching or research positions at the University of Chicago, UCLA, the Wharton School of Business at Penn, Stanford University, and Rice University. He is a former chief economist at the U.S. Sentencing Commission and, as we've noted, a leading expert on guns, and drives some people crazy by the fact that he actually knows what he's talking about. All right, to this FBI report about mass shootings, I think that came out, what, before the election last year?
Right. Yeah, no, it came out right before the election. It made headlines, front page headlines in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, pretty much every major newspaper around the country trumpeted it was the lead item on all the evening news broadcasts. And the claim was as it was reported in the media, was that mass public shootings had exploded over the previous 13 years from 2000 through 2013, going up by an average annual rate of about 16.4%. And I've collected that type of data over the years, and I know it very well. And I didn't believe for a second that they had been that type of explosion that had occurred, but it kind of played into what the administration, I think, was hoping to try to emphasize the gun control issue before the election. And suddenly I started looking at it, and there were two big things that were, or three issues with their data. One was they had actually missed a number of mass shootings. They had missed 20 cases, but they were all pretty much from the early part of the period. So it made it look like 2000, 2001, 2002 were safer than they actually were, which would help make the increase look steeper over time. And the other thing is they weren't just looking at mass shootings. They were looking at mass shootings in what they call active shooters. And these are cases where somebody may fire a gun in public, you know, to celebrate New Year's or something, and nobody gets shot. And the thing is, the way they did the searches for that, they did Google News searches. And the problem is that Google News search stories fall out the farther back in time you go. So if, let's say you were actually looking at a real mass shooting case where four people have been killed, you might get 800 stories when you looked at it a week after the event. You might get 500 if you look at it 5 years later. If you look at it 10 years later, there might be 300 left because, you know, links are broken, websites closed down, other things change. Well, but if there's only one story, which is likely to be the case in these cases where somebody fires a gun in public and nobody gets shot, actually, there's a good chance that that story would show up over, let's say, a couple years after it happened, but you go back any further, it's going to disappear. And so 75% of their so-called active shooter cases occurred, they said, within just the last 5 years. The problem is, it's simply not true. It's an artifact of how they collected the data. Anyway, in March, I wrote an article for a criminology journal, and they published it, and the academic authors who I was criticizing, who were part of this FBI study, just today released a response to it, and they basically conceded the data errors that I was pointing out in the piece. I've been trying since last fall to get the FBI to respond. The FBI, when I've talked to their press people or others, refused to answer any questions about it. And the academics who helped write it up have basically refused to respond to me either. It's only when I kind of criticized them in print in a criminology journal that I guess they felt compelled to do it. And but anyway, I'm waiting with bated breath to hear the FBI explain this now, but it's bothered me that this has basically been received wisdom. The media has refused to criticize them on this, and the FBI has just stonewalled and refuse to address the errors that I pointed out.
So now the academic underpinning for that report has been ripped out from under them.
Right.
So now you're waiting to see if they will acknowledge this. Oh, about that report. In other words, what could they say at this juncture?
I don't think they can say anything. I think it's going to be very embarrassing. I just want to hear them concede it, to be honest with it. Look, just take the 20 cases that they missed. I give the name of the person who did the shooting, where it occurred, the number of people killed or injured. I even give links to news articles in an appendix that I have in the Criminology Journal. So anybody can check this. It's not hard. These cases obviously were there. And yet somehow the cases, they missed these cases early on in their period that they were looking at, which made it look steeper than it was. The other thing is, and this is maybe more minor, where you start your period matters. Everybody knows, even though they missed a lot of cases in the beginning, 2000, 2001 were relatively quiet years in shooting. 1999, Columbine, was not. There was a lot of stuff going on that year, not just Columbine. In 98 was also fairly active. And so, if they just moved it back a year or two, it would have looked a lot flatter also. But you would think a report like this from the FBI would have at least acknowledged those types of issues. But I can't tell you the number of FBI reports I've read over the decades. I've never seen an FBI report that appeared as politicized to me. There's always been kind of a Chinese wall that existed between the gathering of raw data and how it gets used politically. Here they seem to have breached that, where the political incentives have actually corrupted the raw data. And the problem with that is lots of academics, lots of studies are done using the raw data that the FBI puts out because people generally presume that it's right.
So this will spawn a host of more inaccurate reports just from the old adage, garbage in, garbage out.
There'll be studies coming out for years unless it's effectively addressed, and the FBI, I trust, would take this data down and, essentially saying, whoops, we shouldn't put this out there. But right, I've already seen some academic studies that are working their way through the publication pipeline that are citing their data. They run regressions on it, do statistical tests on it to go and look at certain issues. But the data itself, if you, as you say, garbage in, garbage out, if the data itself is corrupted, then what good does it do you to go and do a research study?
All right, to summarize before we go to the break, is there any way that you could say that credibly the FBI just made an error, that they made an oopsie? Is there any reason to place any credulity in that notion at all? Or is this just flat out open and shut case of a report that was, from the moment it was written, designed to distort?
I don't know inside their minds. What I can tell you is almost anybody that you would have talked to would have told them about this problem with the Google News searches. Okay, it's just bizarre to me. They have the money. They can go and use Nexus or Westlaw or other types of computer-based survey, news searches that don't lose data like you do in a Google News search. So it just doesn't make any sense to me, but it's possible they were just very sloppy. The thing that's a little bit harder for me to explain is how they missed these mass shooting cases almost always from the beginning of the period. There are lots of data sets that collect these things. I've put up data sets with this. Other people have put up data sets with these cases. And you would think if you're going to start to collect these cases, at least you'd go to the data sets that people had already done to collect these cases to make sure you wouldn't miss these things.
Well, John Lott is charitable, and I think his answer, though, spells it out pretty clearly. It's a stretch to suggest that this was an honest accident. We'll come back and we'll talk some more about the whole notion of all the good news there is to report about guns, if somebody would bother to report it. Back in a moment. Thanks for being with us on the Jim Bohannon Show, 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. We are talking with John Lott, The president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, their website is their name, crimepreventionresearchcenter.org. Now, one thing that we do hear from the opponents of guns is that if you go and buy a gun, boy, you're the most likely victim. Either it'll be taken away from you by a criminal, or it'll be an accidental shooting, or somebody you know will shoot you. Your thoughts about that charge?
I think it's very misleading. Look, if you push somebody on this notion that guns will be taken away from you, what evidence that they have for that and used against you, what people will refer to is data from police. And they'll say, look, you have about 50 killings of police officers each year, and in any given year you'll have something between 0 and 5 of those cases where the police officers are shot with their own guns. The problem is that's not a very useful statistic. First of all, you have about 16,000 police officers who are seriously injured in assaults each year. You have about 40,000 who are assaulted. And the real question is, when an officer is assaulted, you know, what's the likelihood, you know, they're trying to arrest somebody, they get assaulted, what's the likelihood that the guns can be taken away from them? So it's really, that's the base. The second problem with that claim is that civilians have a much more, much different job than police do. If you ever take a concealed carry class, what you're going to be told is you're not the police. Your job isn't to go and arrest somebody. The benefit that you get from having a gun is to maximize the distance between yourself and the criminal. The thing is, the police don't have that luxury. It's not like the police can run up to a criminal, brandish their gun, watch the criminal run away, and say, okay, my job is done at that point. The police officer has to be willing to come into physical contact with the criminal. And it's at that point that the officer risks assault and risks, in the physical struggle, some possibility that he's going to lose control of his weapon. If a civilian, you know, loses control of, if actually get into physical assault with somebody, they've likely lost the battle at that point. And these other issues about whether having a gun in the home is more likely, you're more likely to shoot somebody else. That really has been completely discredited. There was a study done by a guy named Arthur Kellerman who looked at murder data in multiple studies. He'd look at a city or a few cities over the course of the year. And what he would do is he'd compare people who died in or near a home. He'd ask the relatives of the deceased whether a gun was owned there. And then he would just assume that if you died from a gunshot and a gun was owned in the home, that it was that gun that was involved in the death. In fact, when other researchers have gone back and looked at it, what they found is that 86% of those weapons were actually from the outside of the home, that were brought in by attackers that did the killing, not the gun that was in the home. And that's even including suicides. Just, there are multiple other mistakes, but just changing, just fixing that one error in the data, you know, just not automatically assuming that if you owned a gun and you died from a gunshot, that it was that gun in the home that caused it, and actually going and checking to see which gun it was that was used, reverses that claim. And there are other errors, too.
Here's a call from Joe in Abilene, Texas, for John Lott from Crime Prevention Research Center.org. Hi, Joe.
Oh, hello, Jim. Thanks for the courtesy. And John, always good to listen to you. We need your help. People got rid of their swimming pools and tricycles and bicycles. The childhood deaths would just plummet. The question I've got, John, is there's a quote in the Miranda decision which is almost never quoted, and I'm so disappointed because it answers everyone's questions about the Second Amendment. It's in the end of Section 4. It's the last section, last sentence in it, page 47 in my copy from Thomas, and it's where rights protected by the Constitution are involved. And be no legislation or rulemaking which abrogates them. Basically, we've got our contract, two-party contract from God on the source of our rights. Government can't intervene. It's not even a source of conversation, according to that decision. what's going on here. If there's no rulemaking, which is concealed carry and all the other statutory controls that address the good people out here, the Americans that are concerned about laws and law-abiding situations and help the police and want these things under control, everybody ought to be carrying a firearm, like Vince Vaughn says. Let your comment.
Well, I don't make comments usually on rights types issues. I'll mention this thing generally about the Supreme Court and the Constitution. That is, you know, you read lots of things in the Constitution, the First Amendment that says Congress shall make no laws. Well, you know, basically the way the Supreme Court reads that is Congress shall make no laws unless it has a good reason to do so. And so, you know, you'd think regulations governing political speech, for example, would be struck down. You know, if you want to change that, the argument should be to go and change the Constitution. You know, in the Second Amendment where it says shall not infringe. The question I've always asked when I've taught in law schools or whatever is, how would you have had to write the First or the Second Amendment if you really meant Congress shall pass no laws? So did you have to say, did the framers have to say Congress will never, ever, ever, you know, how many yeah. things would they have to put down there? It seems like, you know, shall never should have been strong enough in order to get that notion across. But, you know, I think judges are human. They like to be influential. They like to go and deal with things. And if you have bright line rules, then you don't get cases on those things. And so if you leave ambiguity and leave it up to the judges to create what they call balancing tests and things like that, then, you know, these cases, important cases that affect lots of people, will always come bubbling up for the court to do their test to decide what the outcome is going to be.
We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more in just a moment. Good to have you with us on the Jim Bohannon Show. Our guest is John Lott. He is president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, and their website, again, is their name, crimepreventionresearchcenter.org. Are there any particular issues of the day that are out there that deserve our attention, Supreme Court case or pending legislation, anything of that nature?
Well, I think there are several cases. You have California as well as Washington, D.C. have been fighting battles over concealed carry. In Washington, D.C., it was banned completely up until recently. The district court there has issued a number of decisions now, basically forcing D.C. to be like the rest of the country in terms of objective rules. They originally wanted to have discretion. He struck down the ban, said he can't have a complete ban. Then they came back and said, okay, but you have to give a really good reason, and we will decide whether you have a good reason for protection or not. And they gave out like a total of 20 permits to people. And the judge said this isn't going to
fly. The D.C. has 600,000 people.
Right, yeah. No, I agree. That's the right way to put it. And so now he said you have to have objective rules like the rest of the country does. You know, once people have a certain amount of training, once they pass a criminal background check and pay their fee, assuming they make those qualifications, then you have to issue it. But D.C.'s already said they're going to appeal. The D.C. appeals court has like two-thirds of it are Democrats, who Obama has appointed. And, you know, it's likely to be the decision will be overturned by the judge, but then it'll be appealed to the Supreme Court.
If we
have a similar,
go ahead.
And there's a somewhat similar battle that's taking place in California.
If we were writing the Constitution today, would there even be a Second Amendment?
I don't know. I mean, you look at surveys of people where you have 70% or 75% say that they support the Second Amendment. But, you know, who knows? I have no idea whether people would even believe that if there wasn't a Second Amendment. I mean, I think they have, you know, there's some interplay between the fact that we have a First Amendment or the Second Amendment and people support it or not.
Yeah. Interesting, sad, but quite possibly the case. Stay on the line and we will speak off air. Again, our guest tonight, a man of great eclectic interests from economics to a variety of other areas, but gun control certainly is in the list. And John Lott is the president at crimepreventionresearchcenter.org. And you'll find good stuff there. I'm Jim Bohannon, and this is Westwood One.